right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, Glenn Cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Springer on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome in to another edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, I'm Nick Springer. It's a Friday. Weather's nice. Let's have ourselves a good day here on RCSD. We'll have a condensed show today, and that is because we'll be switching over to bring you Westwood One's coverage of the Big East Conference Tournament semifinals tonight, and that'll lead into more coverage of the Big East, the ACC, the SEC tournaments, championships, and conference matchups coming up throughout the weekend here on KLWN with Westwood One's coverage. And that will culminate in a special Selection Sunday program we'll have right here on Westwood One, right here on KLWN through Westwood One, covering all of Selection Sunday with the NCAA tournament on Sunday afternoon. So short show here today on RCSD on this Friday, out at 4:15 on today's edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. And coming up later on this hour, the Chiefs, they finally did something. That was pretty cool. Talk about that. Graham Doran of Graham Doran Bracketology is going to join the show at 3:40 to break down all things relating to KU and also the NCAA tournament at large. As I got to imagine, I mean, tomorrow's going to be like Christmas Eve for Graham Doran, I would think, and for all the bracketologists before the big reveal of the NCAA tournament bracket on Sunday. So we'll talk to Graham at 3:40. And then a very condensed 4 o'clock hour out at 4:15, getting on to a little bit of some of the other conference tournaments at the Power 6 level as we look towards the NCAA tournament. RCSD, as always, is brought to you by 23rd Street Brewery right here on KLWN. All right, so Kansas loses against Cincinnati in the Big 12 tournament on Wednesday night. Tough loss for KU. Yesterday's show was a bit sad, I would say, because the mood was sad, I think, for me, and for probably a lot of KU fans. Maybe the mood is not so much sad as it is frustrated or annoyed with kind of how the last 5 weeks have unfolded. You know, so many times when we look at Kansas teams under Bill Self, when you hit February, when the calendar flips into February, you often see those teams start to play their best basketball, and it's been virtually the complete opposite this season, in which Kansas has, since the start of February, that, you know, they beat Houston on what, February 3rd, and since the Houston game in Allen Fieldhouse, it's been tough sledding for Kansas, to say the least. They have now lost 4 of their last 5, heading into the NCAA tournament, and they are maybe the least healthy they've been all season. Although Bill Self did say that he expects Kevin McCullough to practice multiple times this week, which is something he hadn't done really for the past almost 6 weeks, plus 100 Dickinson ahead of schedule. So we'll see. But with this condensed show today off the top here, figured I'd get into the KU basketball heroes and villains from the game against Cincinnati, in which Kansas lost 72-52 before we flip the page ahead to the NCAA tournament, as Kansas basically really has everything focused on that right now going forward. And for KU, you know, Brian Haney on the show yesterday said at this point it would be, if you get to the Sweet 16, if you get to the second weekend, if you're Kansas, it's kind of gravy and you're going from there, right? Which, on one hand, I would tend to agree, but on the other hand, that's a bit frustrating because obviously at Kansas you have the famous saying, faces change, expectations don't. And so the expectations now for this season at least in the postseason, have changed a little bit after you were the number one team in the country in the preseason. So kind of take a ding there. I don't know. But going back to this KU game against Cincinnati, Kansas loses 72-52. And it was a game that, again, I guess I somewhat foolishly thought that KU would be able to get something going. You go back to that analogy from Brian Haney yesterday about the roulette wheel and how you're just hoping to see one of Johnny Furfield, Marco Jackson, Nick Timberlake get going. Well, guess what? None of that happened. In fact, it was a disaster, basically for KU. So on the offensive side, offensive heroes, KJ Adams, obviously. He was fantastic. 22 points in the game for KU against Cincinnati. Really great work there from KJ Adams. He really stepped up for KU when they needed it the most because of the fact that you don't have Hunter Dickinson, you don't have Kevin McCuller, right? You're without two of your all Big 12 caliber players, two All-American caliber players, and somebody else has to step up. And I think I kind of expected, or I guess I hoped, that it would be Johnny Furphy that would be able to step up for KU. And that just wasn't the case for him. And you know, the reality is Furphy's been playing a little bit differently. This was pointed out by Michael Swain on Fog.net about the fact that you go back to like Ochai Agbaji when his red shirt was burned his freshman season, he started off shooting the ball incredibly well and actually struggled down the stretch as well. So it's kind of one of those situations where, and you expect this a lot of times, where guys will hit a freshman wall, right? Guys will maybe dip a little bit. And even Grady Dick maybe had some games like this for KU last season. But the reason why it's happening now for Johnny Furphy is the freshman wall is hitting him now because of the fact that he wasn't really playing and in the rotation and starting throughout non-conference play. So he starts in conference play, starts hot, and then teams start to make the adjustments, and now we've seen him hit this wall over the last four or five games in which he's really struggled, shooting just over 20% from three since the start of February, and in his last five games it's even worse. So I guess you just hope that he can maybe overcome that, and you hope that, you know, he had mentioned that there's some quotes from Furphy about, you know, trying to adjust to teams playing him more aggressively defensively, which makes a lot of sense, right? And in this game, I guess that was going to be true of Cincinnati as well. And Cincinnati is a certainly a strong defensive team. You know, I think credit should be given where it deserves for Cincinnati. They're a pretty strong defensive team. They are in the top 25 in defense overall, and they're a team that KenPom certainly likes. When you look at some of the metrics, you know, they're top 40 in KenPom, 18th in the country in defensive efficiency. So this is not a bad defensive team by any stretch of the sense. And so you knew it was going to be a challenge. But you just would have hoped that Furphy or Timberlake or Omarko would have been able to get something going. And instead it just kind of fell to KJ Adams, who literally had to kind of become Superman on offense to get things going for KU. Ended up scoring 22 points, 9-14 from the floor. He was even 4-6 from the free throw line. Really did everything he could. And everything that KJ Adams has gone through, both on and off the court this season, it's so impressive, and it's a testament to his character that he continues to just come back and give it his all the way he does night in and night out for KU. And again, he's not without his flaws, but when you have a player like that, that's a guy that's just one of those guys where you want him in your corner. You want him in your corner. And and I think it was cool that he got an opportunity to shine a little bit in this game against Cincinnati. Again, unfortunately, I think it was in some ways a negative from the standpoint of you were hoping that it would be that spotlight would go on to one of those other guys, and it just didn't really happen that way. Marco Jackson did have that great dunk, though. Something about KU and having great dunks in Kansas City at the Big 12 tournament. That was an awesome play from Marco Jackson, which was great to see. And then on the defensive side, you know, Bill Self said postgame that he thought that KU did an okay job on defense. And in the second half, to start the second half, they did pretty well. I mean, you know, Cincinnati did not shoot the ball particularly well. I mean, we look at KU. KU ended up shooting 34%. Cincinnati only shot 38%, so they didn't really shoot that much better. But they were able to hit some more threes, obviously, than Kansas, which was the big takeaway, again, one of the big highlights of the issues of that with KU is if they're not effective inside the arc, it is tough for them to find a way to win. Cincinnati goes on, and they played Baylor pretty tight, by the way, last night. Cincinnati did. And then faded and eventually lost against Baylor by 12 points, 68-56. So kind of an interesting game there where Baylor seemed to be kind of messing around, and then Cincinnati kind of eventually lost that game. So I don't know. I guess I was thinking in my head, like, man, if Cincinnati goes on a run here, then maybe it's like, okay, they beat Cincinnati beats Baylor, and it's like, all right, cool, you lost to a good team. Well, that didn't really turn out to be the case either for Kansas. But, you know, on the defensive side, they did overall do a pretty good job against Cincinnati. You know, Cincinnati started the game pretty hot, and that helped them a lot from three. They were 5 of 12 from three in the first half. But Kansas did a better job on them in the second half and held them to under 36% from the floor overall in the second half. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that Cincinnati kind of struggled out the gate and Kansas went on a pretty decent run, a 13-2 run to get it back to within 2 points. But KU faded. And the real question is, with the game like this for Kansas, the Cincinnati game, I think you just hope that it didn't destroy the confidence of those guys too much playing a bad game like that, of the ancillary players of Elmarco Jackson, of Nick Timberlake, and of Johnny Furphy, because I think especially with Furphy, he's going to be a guy that KU will need to have success in more ways than one if Kansas wants to make a deep run. You know, this is not going to be a situation where the Calvary comes back with Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson and it's all sunshine and rainbows. I don't think that's really going to be the case. KU, because A, Kevin McCullough is probably not going to be healthy, and we'll see with Hunter Dickinson also. Bill Self stated post-game after the loss against Cincinnati that if it was a tournament game, Hunter Dickinson would not be able to play on that game on Wednesday night. So he's got to go through a process to get ready to go for Kansas coming up in the NCAA tournament next week. So that's obviously a real concern. But, yeah, this is not going to be a situation where those guys come back. You're going to need – when those guys come back and they just – things start working again, you're still going to need your other guys to perform at a high level. That'll be very, very important. There's no question about that. And it's just unfortunate that it didn't happen. And that's in some ways, like, in terms of the heroes and villains, like, you look at the villain aspect of this and – Dan Skillings was a villain, certainly, but the bigger villain was just the fact that confidence or anti-confidence, right? The fact that you know, Bill Self, I mean, Bill Self even said it post-game. He said, man, we got to find our swag back. And he's absolutely right about that, right? And that's the frustration, is that typically Kansas teams are playing at a level in this in February that's not an issue, or it's less of an issue. But it's just... it's been different this season, and it's been a struggle this season for KU in February and into March. And I guess the question just comes down to how much you can believe they can flip the switch, you know, and I'm sure next week I'll be talking myself into more on the side of yes, they can. But in the wake of the Cincinnati game on Wednesday night and yesterday, it certainly didn't seem that way. It certainly didn't feel that way at all. And that is a crappy feeling to have, and one that is probably largely unfamiliar to a lot of KU fans to not have any confidence, right? There's been years where KU obviously has been down's not the right term, but not as strong. You know, you go back to like 2019, you go back to the year they lost to USC, like teams where, you know, you knew the flaws they had, but you felt like they still probably would have a chance. And this year's team, I don't know. I don't know where people feel on that, like if that is still the case, if you still feel that way, that they even have a chance to get something going. So it's an interesting time, to say the least, for KU right now. And coming off that loss in the Big 12 tournament against Cincinnati, well, I'm curious about this with Graham Dorn. We'll talk about this with Graham Dorn coming up in about 15 minutes from right now, just about what his thought process is on Kansas, and if Kansas has locked in a 4 seed, you're seeing a lot of different 4 seeds for KU still when you look around the NCAA tournament brackets at different bracketologies. But is that a lot? Is that a guarantee for them? And where could they end up as well? So I've seen, I mean, you like ESPN, CBS, even The Athletic, they all have Kansas going somewhere different. So who knows where the Hawks could end up, it would seem, at this point. And I think that's in large part due to what happened against Cincinnati. If you're able to at least win the game against Cincinnati, you're probably in better shape to feel confident or comfortable in where KU might be going. But that's just far from the case right now. which again is a bit foreign territory for KU. So Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology will be joining the show in about 15 minutes from right now, as I said, to break down KU in the NCAA tournament and plenty more. This is a short show today out at 4:15 for coverage of the Big East Conference Tournament through Westwood One. We'll be bringing you Westwood One's coverage throughout the weekend here on KLWN of all the conference tournaments leading into Selection Sunday. And also next week during the NCAA tournament, we'll be having Westwood One's coverage, having you totally covered throughout the NCAA tournament starting next week with the play-in games and then into the actual tournament itself on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You'll be able to hear all those games, and of course, you'll be able to hear KU as well, however far they go or where they go, right here on KLWN. So the Chiefs did do a thing. They did something. They did something. We'll talk about that coming up on the other side. We'll take a timeout. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Springer. Coming up next week, we'll be talking all things, of course, NCAA tournament for Kansas and the rest of the bracket as well. Looking forward to that. Should be a lot of fun. And we'll have you totally covered here on KLWN through Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA tournament through this weekend with the conference tournaments wrapping up. Selection Sunday on Sunday, and then all next weekend, we'll have all of your NCAA tournament coverage on Westwood One. Right here on KLWN. And, of course, we have your coverage as far as Kansas goes throughout the NCAA tournament. Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology is going to join the show coming up in just a little bit here to talk plenty more about the NCAA tournament, where Kansas might fall, what Kansas's outlook looks like, and plenty more. We're out early here today on the show at 4:15, so a condensed RCST today, as we'll be bringing you coverage of the Big East tournament on Westwood One right here on KLWN tonight with the two semifinal matchups coming up tonight, starting at 4:30, the first one scheduled for that. Okay, so late last night, the Kansas City Chiefs, they finally did something. You know, this has been a pretty wild free agency so far in the NFL, and the Kansas City Chiefs had not really been doing too much, made a couple nice re-signings here, but hadn't really done much. Irv Smith, they went and signed him for free agency from a backup tight end from the Bengals. Well, Kansas City Chiefs fans, they finally got what they were looking for. Last night, Kansas City, news comes out, the Chiefs, and now it's official, have signed Marquise Brown from the Arizona Cardinals as a free agent on a one-year deal to come join Kansas City and be added to this wide receiver core that the Chiefs have. And listen, hand up, I just got to say, I have not necessarily been the biggest fan of overall of what bringing Hollywood Brown to the Chiefs and what that could mean. But at this point, I think with me, with my tune, it's just kind of okay, you've gone out and you've brought in somebody who certainly has a higher upside than what anybody had on this wide receiver core last season compared to like MVS or Mecole Hardman. So I think it's especially for the money, considering how much we've seen some other wide receivers get. Masterclass by Brett Veach, number one. And number two, I think it might actually end up being a pretty good fit for the Chiefs, because I do think Hollywood Brown brings a vertical threat to Kansas City that, yes, you technically had with MVS, but he wasn't very good, obviously. And he can also do a lot more as well, right? You know, dig routes, slants, things like that. So I do think this may end up actually making a lot of sense for the Chiefs. And also, to me, I don't know that Hollywood Brown is like a bona fide number one, but that's not really what he needs to be for the Chiefs, because you have Rashee Rice and you have Travis Kelce. So you're going to have enough weapons if you're the Chiefs to where it's not going to be as easy as just honing in on one guy, like what we saw with Travis Kelce. And what, you know, how he would get kind of bracketed and whatnot. So I think this move actually will actually end up being good for the Chiefs. And I didn't, you know, when I said that I was cool on the idea of signing Hollywood Brown, it was never a situation where I thought it would be a bad move to go out and sign him. It was just a move where I didn't know what the money was going to be. And I think the money was really good. It's 1 year, with like $7 million up to $11 million, which I think is pretty good. Again, pretty very good considering what some of the other wide receivers on the market have been getting. And that's the one thing about the Chiefs that has been, that's maybe the most impressive thing that's maybe not always highlighted enough, is that Brett Veach and the Chiefs front office, they are so prudent and so understanding of markets for signing players. They will go out, and it doesn't always necessarily have to be a star player, but they can make a splash without overpaying, right? Now, I don't know. People may look back and say maybe they overpaid for Juwan Taylor last season, but I don't know how much I agree with that. But yeah, this to me, you've added to the wide receiver core for the Chiefs, and listen, you've got Chris Jones back. It sounds like L'Jarius Sneed may be on the chopping block, but maybe not. I don't know. There seems to be a bit of a holdup on the end of trying to hammer out a deal with, like, I think it was the Colts that seems to be maybe the team that the Chiefs, Colts, Titans continue to be the two teams that seem to be linked to conversations with the Chiefs about L'Jarius Sneed. Dude, at this point, and I mentioned this, either just say, hey, Sneed, play on the franchise tag or try to sign him to a shorter-term deal. Because you're going to be bringing back Chris Jones. You're going to be bringing back almost all of your main contributors on defense. Guys like Drew Tranquil, George Karloftis, Nick Bolton. In the secondary, obviously, with McDuffie, you're going to be re-adding Brian Cook back to the mix after his injury from last season. Justin Reed. Like, you're bringing back 80% plus of what you had from your defense. That's assuming Sneed returns as well. From a great defense, and on the offensive end, Rushy Rice entering his second year. You've just added Hollywood Brown. Like, if you're the Chiefs, you are setting yourselves up in fairly good position to go for that three-peat, to make that happen. And the conversation at that point would shift, I think, from a dynasty to one of the best dynasties. I mean, if you go out there and get the three-peat, that gives you four titles in 6 years. I mean, you're talking really, really high level stuff at that point. And at this stage, it looks like it's very much on the table with what you're already committed to bringing back on the defensive side. Plus, again, if you can get L'Jarius Sneed to play this season, maybe, I mean, I don't know, the prospect of trading him, I get it. I do get it, you know, and you do have to view this as a business, because if the Chiefs are able to get a high second round pick or something like that back for Sneed, it could be worth it in a lot of ways for them to go forward. And those are tough decisions you have to make, right? I mean, you go back to like the Tyreek Hill trade, which was probably not easy for the Chiefs, but it worked out for them with back-to-back Super Bowls. So I do like this Hollywood Brown signing overall. I think it makes sense. I think it's a good deal because of the money you paid. And I think that at this point, I probably would have been pretty happy with signing just about any receiver, depending on the money. And I think this could be a good signing for the Chiefs. We'll see. Low drop rate, can do a lot of different things. And again, paired him up with Rushy Rice and Travis Kelce. Go run it back in a three-peat and allow Travis Kelce to ride off into the sunset. Speaking of riding off into the sunset, I would classify this as fairly shocking news from earlier in the day today. Aaron Donald announced he's retiring. And I don't really know that many people expected that, but Aaron Donald of the Rams has retired. Announcement earlier today. Which, again, I don't, that's some pretty surprising news, I think. And that's a big hit to the Rams as well, also, I would think as well. So a bit of an interesting announcement there earlier in the day today about Aaron Donald done. And, I mean, that is – you think about Aaron Donald, man. I mean, we talk about Chris Jones and how dominant he is and how great he is, but Aaron Donald was right there as being one of the best interior defensive linemen not only in the league, but maybe ever to play the game. And he retired earlier today. So try to keep a pulse on what happens with Snead going forward here. But the Chiefs, they did finally go out and they made a pretty big move getting Hollywood Brown last night as they load up for a possible three-peat. All right, Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology is going to join the show coming up on the other side here on RCST to talk all things NCAA tournament as we look forward to the bracket reveal coming up on Sunday. That's next. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, it's Nick Springer from Rock Chalk Sports Talk on KLWN, and despite sitting in a studio all day, my body feels great thanks to Massage Envy. Their total body stretch services can help you stay loose and limber and clear your mind and help your body. Their total body stretch services are completely customizable. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and breathe deep while they help you through the guided stretches. So if you've been dealing with aches and pains, be sure to check out Massage Envy on 6th Street in Lawrence and 119th and Black Bob in Olathe.
Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Springer, and we are coming up very soon on Selection Sunday here, and that means that it's time for our great guest on Fridays, Graham Dorn, to join the show here of Graham Dorn Bracketology. Be sure to check out all of his work on social media and on YouTube as well. Graham, thanks so much for hopping on here again. And listen, I think I asked you this last week. We'll start with Kansas here. I think I asked you this last week about Kansas, but at this point, is it possible for Kansas to fall off of the four line, or do you feel like they still, even with the loss to Cincinnati earlier in the week, should end up still on that four seed line?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people nationally, some very prominent people in the media, talk about Kansas being a five seed. I mean, we're talking about people that cover college basketball every single day, and that would absolutely shock me. Regardless of the health status of Hunter Dickinson or Kevin McCullough, the Jayhawks have done too much to be on the five line. So is it possible? I guess. I mean, I guess it's possible you can convince 12 people that Kansas has some serious health concerns, but I just don't see it. I think Kansas has too strong of a resume. They're 12th in KPI, 10th in strength of record still. I mean, to me, the question should be, is Kansas going to be able to hang on to a three seed, not whether they drop down to a five seed? So I think the question for KU is, are they a three seed or a four seed? And we're going to have to find that out on Selection Sunday.
Well, what may be of almost equal importance for KU is not only what seed they are, but where they end up playing. I've seen some different scenarios where they can end up being in Spokane, still in Omaha, or where else. Kind of, how do you think that, what's important about that, or what do you think is the most likely scenario you think they might end up in terms of where they could play?
Yeah, in my most recent bracket today, I actually have Kansas playing in Omaha as the best four seed, so that's 13th overall. And it is really important where Kansas is on the overall seed list that the committee puts together. And most fans will never see that. You'll just know, you know, the seeds, were they a one seed or a three seed, but there is an overall seed list, and that pecking order is very important for selection and seeding. So basically what I'm looking for is if Kansas can hold on to that 13th overall position, I believe they're going to be in Omaha. And I say that because Spokane is a site that nobody wants to go to. So that's going to be reserved for your 15th, 16th, 14th overall seeds, along with Salt Lake City. Those three Western sites are going to be for those teams. So if Kansas can hold on to the 13th overall position, it actually works out pretty well for the Jayhawks because Creighton cannot play in Omaha. And then you have teams like Duke and Kentucky, and they want to play in Pittsburgh. Baylor wants to be in Memphis. Marquette wants to be in Indianapolis. It actually just works out very well that teams in front of Kansas don't want to be in Omaha except for Iowa State. So if Kansas can be that top four seed or hold on to a three seed, I think the Jayhawks are Omaha bound.
You mentioned Kansas is trying to hang on to a possible three seed or four seed, like you said. With that being the case, KU obviously having already lost earlier this week in Cincinnati, who are some other teams that you're looking at that could possibly be an issue for Kansas as they do try to hang on to that four seed like you talked about?
Well, the number one team that comes to mind is Illinois, just because they are a team in the Midwest that seems to have a pretty decent profile, but is a little lacking in high-end wins. They could remedy that at the Big Ten tournament, and I think Illinois could just make that job easy for the committee by choosing a team that really is solid in predictive metrics and solid in resume metrics. So Illinois could easily be that team. Alabama has excellent efficiency metrics, but they haven't been very good against Quad One, another team that could do that. And we really can't count out Auburn. But I think the real question to me currently is Duke 12th overall or is Kansas 12th overall? And the reason I say that, Kansas has the better resume metrics, but Duke is kind of a little bit more of a sure thing because Kansas has those injury concerns. We don't know how the committee is going to treat that. So I think right now, Duke is the final number three seed to me, but Illinois and Alabama are certainly hanging out there, could possibly pass Kansas.
Let's say KU does end up as a four seed. When you look at some of the teams they could be matching up against, in that case, it'd be a 4-13 matchup. Who are some teams you think you could have an eye on for KU to possibly match up with in the first round?
Do not kill me, Jayhawk fans, but my current bracket has 13 seed VCU facing the Jayhawks in the opening round. And I think there's a very good chance that could happen if VCU wins the Atlantic 10 tournament, because I believe according to my seed rankings, VCU would land the top 13 seed. So they would get to choose their first location. As I said, nobody wants to go to Spokane. Nobody wants to go to Salt Lake City. Omaha's a heck of a lot closer. So as being the top 13, VCU would actually go to Omaha. Another team to consider, if Kansas possibly lands that three seed as opposed to a four seed, pay attention to Morehead State. The Jayhawks could potentially land them in Omaha.
And when you look at how conference tournament week has played out so far with some of the smaller tournaments, what do you think some of the results from those maybe small conference tournaments have been the biggest impact on the overall bracket outlook right now?
Well, I mean, when we're talking about a small conference tournament, I think the Atlantic 10 probably does qualify. And the biggest result there is that Dayton lost. Dayton was always going to be an NCAA tournament team, but the fact that they lost means one bubble was popped. We don't know whose that is yet, but for me, I think it's Indiana State may be the team that ends up not making the NCAA tournament because Dayton did not win the Atlantic 10 tournament. And I think another conference tournament that's been interesting to watch is the Conference USA tournament. Sam Houston State just lost, and Louisiana Tech already got upset. So whoever wins Conference USA is going to be looking at probably at best the 15 seed, but might possibly even be a 16, depending on how things go.
Yeah, you mentioned the bubble there. Let's get into the bubble a little bit deeper here. At this point in time right now on the bubble, I'm going to break this up into three different categories of some teams that you think right now are for sure in, some teams that you think still have a chance if they have some wins here maybe down the stretch, and some teams that you think are on the outside and maybe don't have a chance at this point.
Yeah, I think teams that are really for sure in are going to be anybody that's my nine seeds or above. And then also adding a couple new teams. Mississippi State just destroyed Tennessee today. Mississippi State is in. I believe Michigan State's probably done enough, but I can't say that they're for sure in. But I think TCU getting that victory against Oklahoma locked up a bit. Oklahoma, on the other hand, is a team that I still don't feel 100% confident in. I have them as a 10 seed. I think they're going to be okay, but I'm not sure about that. And I think Virginia and Colorado also fall in that scenario of, yeah, they're probably okay, but I'm not sure. Where it starts to get really tricky is when you get down to the Big East. I think St. John's and Seton Hall are barely in for the time being. But Providence is right there, could play their way in. In the SEC, I think Texas A&M is just barely out, but could play their way in. And look for Pitt coming out of the ACC. They could go ahead and lock up a bid if they upset UNC today.
Yeah, St. John's is an interesting one to me, right? Because they're a team that it seemed like people didn't even have on like their next four out. They get some nice wins. Suddenly, it seems like they might be in. They do have to play UConn, though. And even if they lose that game, maybe if Providence wins, does that push St. John's out, or how do you view maybe where St. John's could fall?
Yeah, currently St. John's is my last team in the bracket, and I think a lot of people in the bracketology community have basically said, well, St. John's is too good to miss the field. They should be in. Their best win is Creighton at home, and that's a great win. But once you get past that, they don't have another win over a team that's definitely going to be in the NCAA tournament. Seton Hall is the closest thing they have, and that game was actually technically on their home floor at Madison Square Garden. So that's just a home win over a team that's hoping to be in the NCAA tournament. I am not convinced St. John's is in the field at all. They have actually lost two of three games against Seton Hall, and two of those three were played on St. John's home court. And then you look at what Seton Hall has done. Seton Hall has beaten UConn. They've beaten Marquette. I actually think St. John's is in more trouble than people think. So if Providence were to pull that upset over Marquette, I think they probably would take St. John's position unless St. John's can pull off the big upset over UConn.
Looking back at the top of the bracket of the top four overall seeds, it feels like at this point you've got, you know, 3-1 seeds locked up with UConn, Houston, and Purdue. That fourth one seed seemed to be a battle between UNC and Tennessee, and I was going to ask you about that, but then Tennessee goes out today and kind of gets blown out. So do you get the sense that North Carolina maybe by default has that last one seed right now, or could anybody else maybe jump into that conversation?
I wouldn't absolutely rule out Tennessee. I think it's possible that North Carolina and Arizona both lose tonight, and if that were to happen, then maybe the committee actually would go back to Tennessee. But for me, I think it's North Carolina right now. I've thought that entering this week. I still believe North Carolina is in that fourth position. And if they win the ACC tournament, I think it is North Carolina. If they don't win the ACC tournament, look for Arizona to potentially steal that one seed out west by winning the Pac-12.
And as you mentioned, as we kind of get closer to the end of conference tournament week this week with the Power Six conferences kind of starting to wrap things up, are there any specific matchups that you're going to be keeping a close eye on, whether it is, you know, for a team possibly like North Carolina fighting for a one seed or a team like St. John's just fighting to maybe stay in the tournament?
Yeah, specifically the ones that have the most weight are those games involving bubble teams and top contenders. So I think, you know, if St. John's, if they beat UConn, they're in. Pitt, if they beat UNC, they're in. It's those sorts of games. And I would even say Providence against Marquette. Providence, even though they're kind of a little bit further outside of the field, if they were to upset Marquette, I think they would have done enough. That would be a seventh quadrant one win for Providence. I think they move into the field. So the games that I think are most impactful to the bracket are those games involving bubble teams. And I throw another game out there from the Mountain West. New Mexico is playing Colorado State. I think New Mexico is in. If they beat Colorado State, I think Colorado State's fine regardless of what happens there. But also look for San Diego State versus Utah State. I think the winner of that game will ultimately land a 5 seed on the bracket, whereas the loser will land a 6 seed.
Throughout this, the past really month or so, you've been pretty steady on having Purdue maybe as your number one overall seed. Do you still feel like that's the case? Or maybe if Houston goes out and wins the Big 12 tournament by beating Texas Tech and maybe Iowa State, is Houston maybe in contention for that conversation? Or do you feel like it's still Purdue at this point?
I think they're absolutely in the conversation, not just because Houston has by far the best efficiency metrics in the country, but at that point they're talking about 16-3 against quadrant one. That is absolutely phenomenal. Last year we talked about Kansas having 17 quadrant one wins, but that was with 7 losses. Houston, if they're 16-3 against quadrant one with no bad losses, I mean, what a resume that is. But still, Purdue has such amazing wins that I think Purdue's probably going to be the overall number one seed unless they lose.
At this point, what do you think would maybe be result would cause the most chaos really on the bubble right now? Which result are you keeping an eye on that maybe you think if that happens, it could maybe create a domino effect and cause a bunch of chaos?
Watch Ohio State. Ohio State's making a very late run. So it's potentially a situation where they end up stealing a bid. And if they were to steal a bid as a bubble team, you know, who's that team that gets knocked out? I think that's certainly a question. And just in general for bid sealers, we have some options still out there. Look at NC State as a potential team that could steal a bid.
And Graham, last week, I hate to bring this up just because, you know, last week I had asked you about a team to keep an eye on for an upset, and you'd mentioned High Point, and then High Point lost in their conference tournament. So looking at the bracket now, who are maybe some 12, 13, 14 seeds that you're keeping an eye on possibly that could make a run or be that Cinderella story this year?
Well, again, I hate to bring it up, but VCU actually looks like the sort of team that you wouldn't want to play because they had some concerns with injuries earlier this year, and they've gotten healthy and they've gotten pretty good. So I would not want to see VCU as a 13 seed, but I think they might end up in that scenario. They do have a tough game today, though. Saturday, though. So we'll see how that game goes tomorrow. They still have to win 2 to make the bracket. Look for Samford. They've got an interesting style of play. I think they're probably not going to be a giant killer just because they seem to be one of those teams that's a little bit more effective when they're playing their mid-major schedule, and they've kind of built their team to win at the mid-major level. But Oakland maybe is more of that X factor at the 14 line that could pull off a huge upset over a 3 seed.
On the flip side, who are you looking at as possibly in that maybe 3, 4, 5 seed range that you think might be vulnerable, a team that maybe might be vulnerable. And I know even maybe Kansas could be that, could be on that list because of the way that they've kind of limped into the tournament. But who do you think might be vulnerable to an upset in sort of that mid-seed range?
Yeah, I think just with the injury concerns, you have to have Kansas on that list. But Duke hasn't looked great for a while. I think Duke is certainly a team that could underwhelm. And I think in some ways they have kind of underwhelmed throughout the course of the season. So I think Duke could be there. Creighton's also a team that relies on a lot of three-point shooting. They've got Kalkbrenner down low. He's a good shot blocker, but not necessarily a super efficient scorer. So what happens if Creighton isn't getting the easy buckets? I think they could potentially be vulnerable to an upset. And then you talk about Alabama. A team that hardly plays defense at all, if you could even consider what they do defense. So Alabama could simply lose a track meet.
Yeah, and another team I was curious about that I wanted to bring up here was Texas Tech, because they've looked really good. They got a nice win over BYU at the Big 12 tournament, still playing in the Big 12 tournament, obviously, coming up tonight. I mean, if they were able to possibly get a win or another win and make the Big 12 tournament final, even win it, how high could they go potentially as a seed in this NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I haven't ruled out Texas Tech as a four seed, but I think they're probably going to end up on the five line. Even if they were to beat Houston, I still don't think they would have done quite enough to be a four seed yet. If they won the Big 12 tournament, I think that would be enough to bump them up to a four seed. But Texas Tech, one of those teams that is getting further and further up the bracket, but also, if you're looking for a team that's vulnerable to upset, I would actually put Texas Tech on that list as well.
He is Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology. Graham, obviously, it's a great time of year, man, for you with the NCAA Tournament Selection Show coming up on Sunday. I know we were just talking before we got on the air here, and you mentioned that Selection Sunday, you might even enjoy it more than the first day of the NCAA Tournament. Why is that?
You're opening up your presents. It's like Christmas morning. Now you get a... see what you got, and yeah, you get to go play with them later, but it's the anticipation, it's the joy of really thinking about what these games are going to be like, trying to pick out your upsets, who's got the easiest path, who's got the most difficult path. And the thing that I love about it the most is that you never know where those upsets are going to come from, because you study them, you look at them, and then lo and behold, the team with the worst out of conference or overall strength of schedule in all of college basketball last year was Fairleigh Dickinson. And they lost 16 games against that schedule, and they still beat a number one seed. So you just never know what you're going to get. I love that anticipation of seeing what the path is going to be like and trying to predict and project forward who might be that Cinderella.
Well, you always know what you're going to get when you check out Graham Dorn. Great, fantastic analytical work on the NCAA tournament and bracketology. Check him out, Graham Dorn Bracketology, on social media. Find him on YouTube as well. Graham, appreciate your time as always, man. And I know I talked to you earlier, but we'd probably love to get you on Monday again to break down the bracket and kind of where things go from there. So hopefully we can talk to you again early next week.
Absolutely, Nick. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, Graham. That was Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk, breaking down all things with the NCAA tournament as we are coming up on Selection Sunday. And we'll see where Kansas falls and where everything else falls as we get ready for the NCAA tournament coming up next week. 1 hour down here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Only about 15 minutes to go here because we're going to be out early for coverage of the Big East men's basketball tournament here on KLWN through Westwood One, with UConn and St. John's being the first game that we just, Graham and I just talked about there, with St. John's being the last team in the tournament. Man, a win against UConn would certainly put them in at that point. So you can hear that game. Pre-game coverage will start at 4:15 right here on KLWN. So we'll be out. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show here. When we come back, we'll look into the conference tournaments the rest of today. And then we'll be out for Westwood One coverage of the Big East Conference Tournament. 1 hour down, 15 minutes to go. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Four o'clock hour here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I'm Nick Springer. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, although it is hardly an hour because we'll be done with the show here coming up in about 5 minutes as we step out of the way for Big East basketball coverage from Westwood One here of the Big East Conference Tournament. The semifinals back-to-back doubleheader tonight for Big East. It's UConn and St. John's coming up, and then Providence and Marquette later on. And we'll have more Westwood One basketball coverage throughout the weekend as well of the conference tournaments in the Power Six as they start to wrap up. And then we'll have a special program, a Selection Sunday program on Sunday from Westwood One as well. So you'll be totally covered. And then, of course, Westwood One with KLWN will have all your coverage of the NCAA tournament next week also. So real quickly, I just wanted to throw out a couple of my picks here for the Power 6 Conference Tournament. So some of them are in the semifinals, some of them are in the quarterfinals still. And I'm feeling somewhat chalky with my tournament picks here for the Power 6 Conferences. I think Houston's just going to win the Big 12 Tournament. I don't really see any other outcome, honestly. I think Houston's just going to win it. I think they'll probably take care of business against Texas Tech. And I don't know. I don't want to pick Iowa State. I just don't. Sorry. Ames sucks. Iowa State sucks. I don't want to pick you. So, ew. No. Houston. In the ACC, things have really opened up for North Carolina because of some of the other upsets that happened in the tournament. So, they have a pretty easy path to win it, and I think they probably just will. So, I'll take North Carolina out of the ACC. In the Big East, I think UConn will probably win. Tyler Kolek, I'm not 100% sure what his status is heading into the semifinal and the final here for Marquette. If he could somehow maybe play, that might give you Marquette a chance, but I feel like UConn's been really dominant. They won by 27 yesterday. I think UConn probably wins the Big East also. And in the Big Ten, the Big Ten's in their quarterfinals. I think Purdue, though. I just feel like Purdue's probably going to win it. I know, boring, right? Really boring. Here's my one fun one. Pac-12. Give me Washington State. Why? For Joe Yesufu. Transferred to Washington State. He's actually out for the year, unfortunately, with an injury, which is a shame. But give me Washington State, man. Give me the Cougs out west in the Pac-12. I've never been a believer in Arizona. I'll take a Washington State in the Pac-12. And then for the SEC, man, Tennessee just got blasted, so it's not going to be Tennessee. It's not going to be Tennessee. I can assure you that because they lost earlier today against Mississippi State. So I'm not a believer in Alabama. I'm not a believer in Kentucky. But I don't really like Bruce Pearl, and I don't really want to go with Auburn either, so it's kind of a bleh. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to pick Tennessee, though, because they lost. No, I'll take Alabama. I can't sit here and take Clowna Perry, and I certainly don't want to take Bruce Pearl either. I'll go with Alabama, even though they don't play defense. Graham Dorn, that was when he said that was funny earlier on the show about Alabama not playing defense. Or I don't even know if you could describe what they do as playing defense. And it's crazy because if you are someone who enjoys sports betting, you would often look at sports betting lines of like over-under numbers for a lot of games. And, you know, for most Kansas games, it's like one in the 130s, 140s, right? Your average Alabama game is like 170 or one in the 160s, 170s. And it hits and it goes over most of the times because Alabama doesn't know how to play defense, which is utterly hilarious. So. All right, Westwood One coverage of the Big East Conference Tournament coming up next here on KLWN. As I said, short show, abbreviated show here on RCSD. Thanks so much to Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology for hopping on the show earlier today. If you did miss anything from today's show, you can check it out on the Best of RCSD podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts, including at kusports.com, presented by Massage Envy. And, of course, we'll be back on Monday to break down all things NCAA Tournament, where KU lands, and plenty more here on RCST. Have a great weekend, and be sure to tune in to KLWN for all of your coverage of the conference tournaments through Westwood One and Selection Sunday coming up this weekend as well. We'll talk to you on Monday. See ya.
Well, that's it here on the podcast side here on the Best of RCST podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. And, of course, if you do want to hear the full show, you can listen every day, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, for Rock Chalk Sports Talk, your only daily KU-centric sports radio show that you'll find every day from 3 to 6 on KLWN. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Thanks so much for listening to the Best of RCSD podcasts presented by Massage Envy. You can also find us on kusports.com as well. Be sure to check out the live show every day from 3 to 6 on KLWN. Thanks for listening.